My guest today is Rudy De Leon. He served as the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, and Undersecretary of the Air Force. And it's an honor to have you in studio, and it's great to see you. Thank you for coming in, despite the weather.
Well, thanks. Good to be here. It's a winter wonderland outside.
It really is surprising because we didn't get anything that anybody expected us to get, I don't believe. You first kind of came into my orbit as far as having you come on the show as when you were a member of the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel, and I had your colleagues from that panel, John Noggle and Stephen Hadley on the show not too long ago. Talk about your takeaways from that process, what you and your colleagues saw, and what you saw personally, maybe that didn't get into the final report, as you reviewed the QDR and reported back on it.
Well, the QDR is the strategy document for the Department of Defense, and the commission that was established by the Congress is really to do an independent look. So Steve Hadley, the former National Security Advisor to President Bush, and Bill Perry, now at Stanford, but the former and very respected Secretary of Defense, in the 1990s, co-chaired. And so our mission was to look at the report and then to look at the force structure to make sure that really the strategy document and the budget had all of the right pieces for this very complicated period that we're living in right now. You know, we've got American combat troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've got hot spots on the Korean Peninsula and elsewhere in the Middle East. Yet at the same time, there's great budget pressures. So all of these things were brought to bear. But the QDR review was really to look at the adequacy of our policies, whether our force structure was adequate. Really, we weren't part of the budget, but we had a lot of talent on the panel, and I think it was very interesting.
It would have been fascinating. I told John and Steve to be a fly on the wall at any of those meetings to hear, whether it's the full committee or panel or the work groups or whatever, just because of the brain power that's involved. We've got resources about both the QDR and the independent panel posted at federalnewsradio.com. Just search on either of those terms and you can find copies of the report and copies of the panel's report and everything that you would like to know about the QDR is available there. What struck you besides what wound up in the report? One of the things that Steve and John talked about was the fact that Secretary Perry insisted that the report was going to be unanimous. The final product included the names of everyone, and everyone agreed that what was contained therein was the sentiment that they wanted to project. What else, maybe, did you take away besides what was included in the report about what the QDR, where the QDR estimates that we are today and should be in the future?
Well, I think one of the things that we looked at, well, first we had to do a comparison. We used to organize our the size of our forces around something called the 2MRC model. That is, the forces need to be able to deploy and do two major regional contingencies simultaneously. Well, so that we could have a measure of the QDR and our defense forces in 2010 when we were doing this study, we actually went and we looked at something that was done in 1993 called the bottom-up review. The Cold War was over. There was, like today, tremendous budget pressure. President Bush, during his tenure, had done something called the base force, which drew down the size of our ground forces in Europe. But in our 2010 QDR, one of the things that surprised us was that other than the additional ground forces that have been recruited really for a rotation base for our forces in Iraq and Afghanistan to deal with their operational tempo, I think all of us on the QDR review were surprised to see that in many respects our force in 2010 was smaller than it actually was in 1993. Mm-hmm. And that quickly drew us to a conclusion that I think surprised us, and that was it was the cost of next-generation systems, the cost of military personnel, the cost of operations and maintenance were so much higher that there really was a constraint on future missions, that even with the big increases in defense that have occurred from 1998 really to 2010, that it was the cost of buying next-generation systems or the cost of having additional military manpower and force structure that was a huge constraint. And at a time when there were still many critical missions that had to be done. And so this led us to some internal discussions. What would we start to think about doing differently in the future?
Mm-hmm. I imagine you weren't surprised then when Secretary Gates's, shall we say, fine-tuning of the budget and spending priorities involved primarily systems.
Well,
and the big ones.
Yes, big ones. I mean, I think the Secretary and his team are really trying to do a couple of things. One, make sure that our forces in combat are fully supported. Two, to support the troops in combat, you've got to do two things. You've got to pay for readiness today, but you've got to make sure that you've got capabilities for the future. And there, Secretary Gates has said we need to really focus on those capabilities that have a dividend for the kind of conflict we're in,
mm-hmm.
and the kinds of pressures, rather than where we might be in 20 years or in the out years.
Mm-hmm.
So Secretary Gates has much focused on near-term solutions to problems that the troops in the field are dealing with. And then the final piece is that we're in a budget environment in 2010 that is considerably different than the one in 2001, when the budget was balanced, when our force was largely home at garrison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, we've spent $1 trillion in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all of those pressures on the defense budget and the federal budget more generally are now at bear. And, you know, we've got the Tea Party, we've got deficit reduction commissions, we've got the debt ceiling. And so all of these pieces put pressure on DOD as the largest piece of discretionary budget. And, you know, the deficit commission was looking at Social Security and Medicare and the entitlement budget as well. So I think a long-winded answer on my part, but I think Secretary Gates is really trying to reconcile troops in the field fighting a war, making sure that we're adequate in terms of capabilities for the future. And then, oh, yes, you know, we're in a hard time economically.
Yeah. Given all of these challenges, and I'm going to separate this from the budget for a moment, but given the challenges that are out there in the world, you talked about Iraq and Afghanistan, obviously, Korea, the president of China is in town. We'll talk about our relationship with China in a little bit and how that affects maybe what's going on inside the Pentagon. But is the 2MRC model still realistic, do you think? Or, I mean, because if something were to bubble up in Korea that involves us, then we'd be looking at, I guess, a 3MRC because we're still involved at least somewhat in Iraq.
Well, I think, you know, the 2MRC served its purpose in those first years after the end of the Cold War. But I think correctly, Secretary Gates has focused the most recent QDR on the troops in the field and making sure that they have the resources they need to accomplish their mission. But, you know, as we deal with a limited number of budget resources, you always want to make sure you have the budget to cover your national security. But our economic security is a huge component of national security. And making sure that you have the resources to cover your needs both today and tomorrow, I think that's the challenge.
You wrote recently about that very issue, and we'll discuss that especially in relation to our relationship with China when we come back from the break. Rudy De Leon is my guest on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in just a moment.
Only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds? Sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you. And the trial is free when you call 1-800-600-7477 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Sensa is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Sensa, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-600-7477. 1-800-600-7477. That's 1-800-600-7477.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Gauzy. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron, host of How to Protect and Grow Your Money. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Join me to learn how to safely grow your money on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Call me at 301-773-3923.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. What do government contractors think about doing business with the government? We'll have details on a just-released survey, tapping the assessment of government contractors on issues like resolving contracting issues, bid protests. Interesting stuff. We'll tell you about it. And an update on your thrift savings plan with Tom Trabucco of the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Rudy De Leon. He's Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress, and among other credentials has served as Deputy Secretary of Defense and Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. We talked a little bit before the break about some writing that you've done recently about China. President Hu Jintao is in town for a summit at the White House with President Obama. And you mentioned the economy, our own economy, and making sure our own house is in order is issue number one when it comes to our relationship with China. Why is that the case, do you think?
Well, I think that you know, when you look at U.S. national security these last 60-plus years, it's not only the capability of our uniform personnel and the equipment that they have, it's also been the economic strength of the country. During the Truman years, when they were putting together the Marshall Plan, Robert Lovett, who later became Secretary of Defense for President Truman, wrote a memo and he talked about the grand expectation. And his grand expectation was the combination of American national security strength and then just the pure economic strength of the United States after World War II, that those two things would create this grand expectation of American national security strength. And that really did turn out to be true from the end of World War II until the breakup of the Berlin Wall. You know, China has been a rising economy for many years. But I think no one expected to see the rise of their economic strength in the 11 years since they were granted permanent status under the WTO rules of the big PNTR vote in the late 1990s. So there are really three baskets of issues as President Hu Jintao comes to Washington this afternoon, and I'm sure the crew out at Andrews is making sure that the runway is ready.
Indeed.
But
I'm a little disappointed because my invitation to the dinner tonight seems to have gotten lost
in
the mail.
Well, tomorrow's is the big dinner.
Oh, okay.
Tonight
I didn't get that one
now,
either.
If you were going tonight, I'd really be impressed because that's in the personal dining area. But I think there are really three big baskets of issues for the United States and China as they come together at this summit. First, there are the bilateral issues. Trade, intellectual property rights, military-to-military relations. The second basket are regional security issues, North Korea, the sanctions on Iran at the United Nations. And then the third are sort of a set of global issues, energy and climate, human rights, the Nobel Peace Prize winner who could not send family members because he was imprisoned in China. So I think these three sets of issues, the bilateral issues, the regional issues, the global issues, will all come at play. But I just posted an article I wrote with my colleague at the Center for American Progress, Winnie Chin, and we really said that there were two big things on the agenda from the U.S. perspective. One, Americans have to get their economic house in order. That means dealing with deficits. It means creating jobs. It means unleashing American innovation. Why? Because in some corners of the world, they're looking at the U.S. not as the vibrant, dynamic economy that we know, but instead is just simply a status quo economic power that's trying to hold on. Mm-hmm. So aside from the currency issues and the trade issues with China, we've got to get our economic house in order, and that's both deficits and jobs. Because that's been a core strength of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The second big issue for this summit is on the military-to-military exchange side. In the 2009 communique after the Beijing summit, there was a phrase, strategic trust, and rooting a military-to-military dialogue between the United States and China. Well, our military dialogue has really been marked by start, stop, and restart. We're in a restart phase, but it's not been a smooth dialogue in the year plus since the last summit. But one of the challenges for the Chinese is to improve their transparency and to improve their national security processes, particularly during a crisis. Now, the United States has a long history of picking up hotlines and talking to Moscow or talking to other government leaders when there's a crisis going on. The Chinese culture is a little bit different. They like to talk and engage when things are smooth, mm-hmm. when things are well running. And yet, as we saw on the Korean Peninsula 6 weeks ago, just the lead up to our own holidays here in the United States, it got fairly tense.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about this situation since China's president is coming. And then I'd also like to draw on your experience at the Pentagon in personnel matters
sure.
to talk a little bit about paying the people that work there mm-hmm. and how some of that is changing. When we come back, we'll have that conversation with my guest, Rudy De Leon. He's Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 61 points. The Nasdaq higher by 2. Shares of Apple are lower on the news. CEO Steve Jobs will be taking another medical leave of absence. This marks the third time in the past decade he's had to step away from his position at Apple. Jobs is a survivor of pancreatic cancer and received a liver transplant in 2009. Citigroup posting a fourth quarter income of $1.3 billion. $1.5 billion. That was on fewer losses from loans, but volatility in the bond market hurt earnings at the New York bank. And Delta Airlines says it made a $19 million profit during its fourth quarter. The results would have been better, except for a blizzard that battered the East Coast in December. Analysts had expected an even larger profit, but still, this is the first fourth quarter profit for Delta since 2000 and its first annual profit since 2007. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
Everybody knows that Acura cars and SUVs have a reputation for quality, reliability, and exceptional engineering. That's why buying a certified pre-owned Acura is such an easy decision. And it's even easier during the Engineer to Last sales event. Right now, you'll find exceptional savings on every certified pre-owned Acura, including 0.9% APR for well-qualified customers. Visit your local Acura dealer or Acura.com today. Offer ends January 31st, 2011. See dealer for details.
Intuit Small Business presents Invoices in 30 Seconds. Just open Intuit QuickBooks, type in the who, what, where, when, and how much, and voila! A professional invoice ready to print or email in under 30 seconds, giving me ample time to do the backstroke through this swimming pool of cherry gelatin. I'm stuck. Try Intuit QuickBooks online free for 30 days at Intuit.com. We do the legwork so you can do what you love. Intuit. Small.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the first and third Tuesday of every month. It's our Pentagon Solutions series, where we take a deep dive conversation with someone who's an expert in the world of the Pentagon and looking for solutions to the challenges the Pentagon's facing. And my guest today is the Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress, Rudy De Leon, former Deputy Secretary of Defense and Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. And we were talking a moment ago, Rudy, about President Hu Jintao of China coming to Washington today for a summit with President Obama. And the two points that you were talking about in this piece that you've written, we'll link that up, by the way, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today. Issue number one, getting our own economic house in order, creating jobs and promoting innovation. And number two, China moving its national security institutions into the 21st century, as you write it. What level of discussion are we going to be at, do you think, when China holds a lot of our debt and at the same time we're asking for a lot of maybe concessions? We're asking them to see our point of view on a lot of things. And they have not been, at least in public, as demanding on us, saying we want you to do thus and so policy-wise.
Well, we come back to this central issue that economic strength mm-hmm. is a huge component of American national security. And so getting our house in order, dealing with deficits, getting the economy started so that we're generating good jobs and that we're generating innovation, because those are American strengths. That's a real, real challenge. And I think it'll be a challenge for the president. It'll be a challenge for the Congress to find a way forward that unleashes our entrepreneurial sense, that takes care of the benefits that are pledged to our citizens on health care and Social Security and education, and national security, but that recognizes that getting back on track of the United States, independent of any China discussion, is just a core to our national security. So mm-hmm. I think that's one big piece. You know, many have raised the question of China holding Western debt. You know, some estimates say it could be it's close to $2 trillion. So that's a huge leverage on the American economy. So this comes back to, we've got to get our house in order, and mm-hmm. we've got to deal with deficits. But, you know, we did that in the 1990s, dealing with the deficits, unleashing the entrepreneurial skills of the American economy, working with a Republican Congress and a Democratic president. So the model is there, but we really have reached a point where the unconstrained, you know, notion that government spending, or, you know, that we can bear these costs without them having an impact, I think that's challenge number one.
Is this the kind of summit where we can expect a week or 2 weeks from now, as we really are able to analyze the events that take place during it and the discussions that take place during it? Is this the kind of summit where we can expect some tangible result where this one particular thing happened? Or is this part of the dialogue that's ongoing between these two big countries?
I think it's more the dialogue. I think this has got to be a roll up their sleeves. You know, and they had an impressive communique in 2009, but if we were to score tangible actions, we would say that it's halftime and definitely not the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is one to see where the U.S.-China agenda is across a variety of issues, economic, mill-to-mill, regional security, but also human rights mm-hmm. and religious expression. So there'll be a lot of hard issues, but if they can use the time to keep us on the agenda and moving forward, I think that's the challenge. I think both sides, you know, will have to look for ways that they can compromise where appropriate. But as you said, debt and our not controlling our economic fate is a huge impediment on our national security right now.
We're going to shift gears here for a little bit and talk about the people who are working inside the Pentagon and some of the solutions that they're living through right now. You have been involved with the National Security Personnel System for a long time. Talk about your involvement with it, and then we'll discuss some of the things that have happened and where some of the folks that are in NSPS are finding themselves today.
Sure. Well, NSPS, one of those Washington acronyms.
It's a four-letter word it's become, isn't it?
National Security Personnel System, implemented during the Bush administration in the 2002-2003 time period, generated lawsuits, generated lots of tension up on Capitol Hill. And so early in his tenure, Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn created a panel to look at NSPS and to report back. And so I chaired Robert Tobias, a former president of the Treasury Union, was a member.
Friend of the show.
And then Mike Baer, who chaired the Defense Business Board, was the third member. And so our charter was really to look at the NSPS. Where was it working? Was it not working? Did changes have to be made to meet with labor and to start a big dialogue on NSPS? Ultimately, we found that there were some serious issues on the implementation side, and even further, Congress decided to revert back to the general schedule system. Mm-hmm. And we're right in the middle of the transition from NSPS back to the general schedule system right now. We were just talking about program managers and how John James is now running the transition office on NSPS back to the GS system.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about some more of the details of where NSPS is headed for the foreseeable future, what we know is going to happen,
right,
and then talk about some of the things that you found and your team found and where you would like to see it go and what it might mean for the future of the people who are working under it or who may potentially in the future. My guest is Rudy De Leon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. Our Pentagon Solutions series continues in a moment.
Today, you're being asked to make every dollar count more, to do more with less and still less, and to continue to serve and protect. Yes, if you're in government, making tough choices just keeps getting tougher. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you afford more today, prepare for tomorrow, and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostick, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, weekday morning, 6 to 10.
We're talking with Tom Hicks. He is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Energy.
Part of the Secretary's goals is that by 2020, half of our energy will come from alternative sources. And so by that timeline, and based on our working with industry, we feel that the fuels will be competitively priced with petroleum at that point, and we'll be able to use those as drop-in replacements into our ships, into our aircraft.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
The We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions, and my guest on the program today, Rudy De Leon, the Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress. And we talked a little bit before the break about the National Security Personnel System, NSPS. As you mentioned, John James is directing the transition office. The people who are in it are transitioning back to the GS schedule, the general schedule. And as they leave, they're finding what when they go back to the GS system that they left in 2006 or whenever they were phased into the pay bands?
Sure. So there were about 200,000, a little bit more, that were covered under the NSPS, the National Security Personnel System. So almost three quarters of those had been transitioned back to the GS system by September 2010. And so there's a remaining quarter that are now still in transition. We saw that over the weekend the DOD issued a ruling saying that those that were still under NSPS were still eligible for their performance bonuses, notwithstanding the freeze on government personnel. So I'd say also that during this period, since Congress acted really in the fall of 2009 in the Defense Authorization Bill to January 2011, one of the things that has occurred is that there has been just a very extensive dialogue between those on the government side and those on the employee side with some of the government organizations, the unions, but also some of the work organizations. And so it's recreated the sense of partnership between the workforce supervisors and then the leaders of those supervisors. One of the things that we found in our review of the NSPS was that, yes, it was a very complicated system, and there was tremendous confusion over bonus pay and the pay pools, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we also found was that the workforce felt that the establishment of sort of strategic goals for the respective organizations was something that everyone readily embraced and actually found it morale enhancing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as the NSPS transition period goes forward, as both the Department of Defense and the Office of Personnel Management, as well as the House and Senate Armed Services Committees, look at this issue, all have embraced this concept of strategic management and strategic objectives for organizations. That's important for employee morale. It's also important for these public-private competitions that occur under OMB regulation from time to time. I think it helps the government side be more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also one of our lessons from the NSPS study was too much too quickly just created too much confusion. Our study said do a total reconstruction. Congress took it a step further and said just go back to the GS system and reestablish trust in the system. But one of the things that you come away from that study, you recognize how important the career civilians are to U.S. national security.
Mm-hmm.
And they raise, you know, they perform a variety of functions from contracting out in the field. One of the things, Iraq and Afghanistan, we did not have enough contracting officers who were ready and deployable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really part of the tooth,
mm-hmm.
but also their expertise and their knowledge and their work skills. In some of the union positions, we found that the industrial skills, welding, metal repair, some of the things they do in the depots, that the work was top-notch, that they really are a critical component to U.S. national security. So in addition to the work on the NSPS and wanting to make sure that we had the performance management and the strategic objectives of the system retained, We also want to make sure that we keep our focus on the federal workforce. Now, we're going through some tough budgets. We've had a discussion on that.
Mm-hmm.
Congress has mandated a pay freeze as a component of deficit reduction. But it's so easy to be critical of the federal workforce when, in fact, what they do in terms of the national security contribution at the Department of Defense, as well as the Foreign Service or the Intelligence Service, they are continuity. They are a tremendous source of expertise as we go about the national security missions of the United States.
Is there a pay-for-performance model out there that you think that all of the various stakeholders can come together on? Or are the views, are the things that one group might be for so opposite the things that another group is for that it just will be something that will be hard to make work?
Well, I think, again, so many things were happening so quickly and in such a compressed time, and we found that there was an unevenness in terms of how some of the DOD components were implementing it. There tended to be very senior people in the Navy working NSPS, in the lines of responsibility in some of the other locations, not as clear cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some of our depots, which are, again, very critical to logistics and logistics support, in many cases, you know, the job skills themselves were determining the pay grades. If you're a master, you know, in welding or metal repair, things like that, you know, the marketplace is setting what the pay scale is, and the government needs to be competitive. And we've got a lot of represented workers that are at those depots that are doing outstanding work. And so the notion that one size would fit everything, or that one set of policy and practice would cover all functions of the civilian workforce on the national security side, again, it just seemed to be too much, too quick, creating more confusion than it was.
If you were back in your old job as head of personnel and readiness, this was your responsibility to start this from scratch, would that setting of strategic goals be the first step in whatever new system you devised to go in this direction?
So I think the strategic concepts, and then to make sure that everybody had their say, and mm-hmm. that we were doing as much listening as we would be talking or declaring or proposing.
And that seems to be what John James is doing now, even though we're apparently still way far back of starting down this path again. He's talking on the Pentagon website, talking about working groups with just as many labor representatives mm-hmm. as management and so on, and trying to create these dialogues to move
forward.
Well,
I think that was his assignment from Deputy Secretary Lynn,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, having I think Deputy Secretary Lynn understood what the congressional directive was and understood that you had to get the level of trust going again. And, you know, what's interesting is if you read John James, this is a man who's had an extensive background in program management and who knows how to lead large entities.
Mm-hmm.
So he clearly has got a big set of leadership skills.
The next milestone, it says here on the Pentagon's website, is a planning group meeting with labor partners just 2 days from now. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on that because of the tremendous amount of interest in what happens next with pay at the Pentagon. We'll have that information as it happens at federalnewsradio.com. And we'll wrap up my conversation with Rudy De Leon in just a moment on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, join guest host Tony Vergnetti, Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service, and Jim Eisenman and Melissa Mehring of the MSPB to learn more about the cancellation of the Federal Career Intern Program and the MSPB rulings on the FCI.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CPMS, OPM, the Joint Staff, UCOM, NORTHCOM, STRATCOM, DISA, DLA, and OSD. Don't miss this year's event to be held on February 14th through the 17th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit the website hcmdusa.com for more information and to register. Mention code FNR for a $200 discount.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My Pentagon Solutions guest today is Rudy De Leon. He is the Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress, and he's the former Deputy Secretary of Defense, Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, and Undersecretary of the Air Force. And so I know because of your service in the Department of the Air Force, you're a little biased when it comes to military football, I would imagine. We are the flagship station of the Naval Academy, so I hope you don't hold that against us.
No, the Navy, they've won the Commander's in Chief trophy this year.
Yes, happy to hear them do it on our station. What are the things that you are most involved with at Center for American Progress on a day-to-day basis that affects the way the Pentagon operates?
Well, we have a number of programs, but I think one, we've got a dialogue between the U.S. and China, Track 2, it's called, think tank experts on both sides that really work through some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think dealing with the budget and that nexus, as we've been talking throughout this hour, of the relationship between economic strength and U.S. national security, and then making smart budget choices, because we know that dealing with the budget pressures is going to be a challenge for the Department of Defense, and making sure that we're fair to our troops, both in terms of their pay and their quality of life, as well as supporting them and their families when they're in the field. And then I think, you know, how we use all of the tools of U.S. national security, which includes the civilians at the U.S. Agency for International Development and our diplomats at the State Department and our intelligence officers, making sure that we use all of the tools of national security since the end of the Cold War. We've been deploying our troops over and over and over. They've got higher op tempo than ever before. And so looking at all of those issues, I think, is the challenge. You know, it used to be that Washington would pause at the end of the year, but with the after the election congressional session and then Congress ramping up and getting busy, the Armed Services Committee having their organizational meeting tomorrow, the Washington, D.C. summit between the U.S. and China this week, and then the debt ceiling and the appropriations for the fiscal year, you know, we don't slow down. And so all of these things are just continuous debates, and national security is in the center.
Mm-hmm. You've planted a seed for a conversation that I would love to have you come back and undertake either one-on-one or with a colleague of yours, a former colleague of yours, and that is the issue of the level today and the necessary level in the future of cooperation amongst DOD, state and USAID, and the intelligence community, and I would love to have that conversation with you in the future. Thank you very much for being here today. I really appreciate your time.
Appreciate it, Francis.
Rudy De Leon is the Senior Vice President of National Security and International Policy at the Center for American Progress. You can find out more about him and find out more about the center at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll have that posted for you, as well as a link to the piece that he's written along with his colleague Winnie Chin, titled U.S.-China Military Relations at the Summit, Moving Beyond Start, Stop, Restart. That'll be posted up for you to read at your leisure as well later this afternoon. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose continues. Our focus on the Pentagon today, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, speaking on Friday at the State Department's Foreign Press Center, and his comments when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back for hour number two in just a moment.